Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So on behalf of our Mali Pandit Study Center here this morning, I'd like to take the opportunity to welcome each and every one of you to be here with us for Sunday, Srila Prabhupada's Sunday Love Feast. This morning we are very, very fortunate to have with us for the very first time for Sunday Feast here, His Holiness, Srimapada Swami. So we'd also like to welcome Maharaj by saying, Arigol, everyone! So His Holiness Ramapad Swami is a disciple of His Divine Grace, D.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the founder of the Hare Krishna movement. He is a traveling sannyasi, also initiating guru, traveling different parts of the world, spreading the message of Krishna consciousness. And we are very, very fortunate this morning that we will be hearing him. We will be conducting a lecture from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So over to His Holiness Ramapad Swami. Hare Krishna.
I was inspired by the discussion on Friday evening on some of the topics that came out of the questions and answers session. I was thinking I'd want to continue on that subject. But then I thought, there'll be persons here on Sunday that didn't hear Friday evening, and so it wouldn't be fair. The subject was things like when we're doing our studies at the university and we come across notions that are diametrically opposite our spiritual conceptions or Vedic conceptions, how do we process that? Or when people ask, when you say Krishna consciousness is scientific, what does that mean? So I got excited by those questions and was thinking, oh. But I think I would better back off a little bit from that subject and express I'd like to discuss three verses from the first canto Srimad Bhagavatam that summarize the essence of the message of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. You can learn 18,000 verses by understanding three verses. That's a good arrangement, right? There's three verses that express Vyasadeva's realization under the instruction of Narada Muni that make up the basis of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the essence of all the Vedas. So here's the sequence of events. Who is Srila Vyasadeva? He's the which? He's a form of Krishna, okay. What did Vyasadeva do? Yeah, he wrote down all the Vedas. Right? Okay. Just check. So, Vyasadeva is in the category of Shaktive Shavatar. There's, according to our revealed scriptures, there's avatars are forms of the Lord that descend from the spiritual world, come to this plane to manifest the spiritual world on this plane. That's very merciful. There are six different categories of avatars. When we think of avatars, we often think of the Leela avatars, Das avatar, Kurma, Matsyam, Sringa, Varaha, Parashuram, Ramachandra, Krishna, Balaram, Buddha. The Leela avatars. That's one of six categories. There's Manvantara avatars, the Manus, another category of avatar. Guna avatars. This is a little bit about the science. How is this a science? So there's Guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh. Guna avatars, the avatars of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Yuga avatars, the avatars that establish the principal means of achieving spiritual perfection for each Yuga or each age, the Yuga avatars. So this is another category, the Shaktyavesh. Shakti, we all know what Shakti means, means potency, right? Personalities that are empowered with the potency of God, that's really something. It's like, you know, electricity having a 30 amp fuse that carries 150 amps. You'd short out the 30 amp fuse with 150 amps. So the living entity can't, how can the living entity carry the potency of the personality of Godhead unless the personality of Godhead so desires, and then he doesn't short circuit. He can manifest the fullness of the Lord's potency. That's Shaktivesh avatar. Only in, so according to our scriptures, and be specific, according to Vishnu Purana, Parashara Muni, who is the speaker of Vishnu Purana, says that formerly he is one of these Chiranjivas, he lives a long time. Formerly he was also Vyas, because Vyas is a service that performed at the end of every Dwarapa Yuga. At the end of every Dwarapa Yuga, those that are knowledgeable in the Vedas know in advance this age of Kali is about to come, and qualities of people in this age of Kali deteriorate rapidly, like rapidly. So in anticipation of that deterioration of the qualities of mankind, Vyas comes to take the sound vibration form of the Vedas and put it in a written form. He writes down the entire Vedas. In fact, he divides them. That's the name, meaning of his name, Veda Vyasa. He compiles and divides the one Veda into four. And it happens every Dwarpa Yuga. And do you know how many Dwarpa Yugas there are? In the life of one Manu, there's 72 Dwarpa Yugas. And there's 14 Manus in every day of Brahma. So 14 times 72. And that's just a day of Brahma. And he has 365 days times 365 to make 1 year times 100. That's how many Veda Vyasas there are in the life of one Brahma. That's a lot of Veda. So Parashara was previously also Veda Vyas. And he speaks in Vishnu Purana that my son, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, he's the best. He gives two reasons why he says he's the best. He's not just Shaktyavesh avatar, he's Krishna himself. Therefore, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. He's called, why is he called Dvaipayana? What does Dvipa mean? Navadvip, right? You've been to Navadvip. What does Navadvip mean?
Nine islands.
Dvipa means island. Island. Just like we cross the Essequibo River and there's all kinds of dvipas all around, right? That's an island. And there's nine islands in Navadvipa. That's the meaning of Navadvipa, nine islands. Now you know. So Vyas was born on a dvipa. Did you know that? Krishna, Dvaipayana Vyas, he was born on an island. Here's how he was born. One day, Parashara Muni, the father of Vyas, was crossing a river, and who was the person tending the boat? Satyavati, who later became the wife of Maharaj Santanu. But before she became the wife of Maharaj Santanu and the mother of Vichitravirya, who later became the king following Santanu. So Satyavati was the daughter of a fisherman, and he wanted his daughter to get the blessings of sadhus that may have to cross the river. So by doing that seva, or taking them across the river, she would get their blessings and their association. So Parashara Muni was in her boat crossing the river, and he was very expert in astrological calculation. He was doing his astrological calculation, and he realized this is the auspicious time for an appearance of an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna himself is going to appear. So he made a proposal to Satyavati. Would you like to bear this child? I'll be the father and you be the mother. And she said, I know you're a great sage, but how can this be possible? She said, don't worry. It's not the normal kind of conception. This is transcendental appearance of the Lord. And she said, well, we're right in the middle of the river. Everyone will see. She said, well, don't worry. By my mystic power, I'll create an island. And I'll create an island such that no one even can see the island. No one will even know. He said, well, okay, but I'll have this pregnancy for some number of months and I'm not even married. He said, don't worry. The pregnancy will be followed immediately by delivery of the child. In fact, there won't even be a baby. He'll have to be a full-grown adult. And she said, well, you say so. So Parashara Muni became the father, and Satyavati became the mother of Krishna, Dvaipayana Vyas. Each of the Vyasas has some prefix to their name. He was Krishna, Dvaipayana Vyas, that one, out of all the thousands and thousands and thousands of Vyasas. So Parashara Muni said, because he's Krishna himself. And the second reason why this Vyas is very special, he said, this Mahabharata, every Vyas compiles a history, a itihasa. He's wanting everyone to move forward because people are coming in late. Sorry. Are you with me? You guys with me? Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. Who is his father? Parashara Muni, right. And who is his mother? Satyavati, right. Very good. Parashara Muni and Satyavati. And Vyas was born. So, because he's the personality of Godhead, Parashara Muni said, his Mahabharata is super excellent. Only the personality of Godhead could compile a Mahabharata like this. Even my Mahabharata wasn't as excellent as this Mahabharata. So there are different versions of Mahabharata. But Krishna Dvaitaya Vyasa's version of Mahabharata is super excellent. So, according to the plan of the personality of Godhead, because his mood is not the mood of God, his mood is the mood of the servant of God, the servant of his father, and the servant of God. So, under the plan of the Lord, he, after some time, he undertook the big project of compiling all the Vedas. So this is, the compiling of the Vedas is discussed in chapter 5 of this first canto, for those of you that like reading Srimad Bhagavatam. You can find out how Vyasa did the compiling. And what his system was, that there was one Veda, known at that time as Atharva Veda. Could this fan be adjusted so it doesn't blow up? Just can blow out that way, that's fine. There it is. Okay, so Vyasa is now compiling the Vedas. He took the one Veda, which was just many, many verses, and he divided it into four, Rigsama, Yajur, and Atharva. And each of the four Vedas represents different features of Vedic wisdom. And each of those Vedas has, I have a very nice chart you can see very clearly. There's the portion of the Vedas, like say the Rig Veda. There's a portion, there's the mantra section. And then there's the how you chant the mantra section. And then there's the philosophical meaning of the mantras that you chant. That's the Upanishadic section. Most people that know about the Vedas, they know about the Upanishads. You want to know why they know about the Upanishads? Because they're impersonalists. And they like to speculate on the Upanishads because they're very deep, they're not clear, and so they speculate their brains out and come up with different meanings that are impersonal on the Upanishads. But there are also those that study the Vedas for the purpose of rituals. Here in Dhyana, there are lots of priests that do rituals. The source, original source of those rituals come from the Vedas, the compiling that Krishna, the Vaipayana Vyasa did. Then aside from the Shruti portion, then there's the Smriti portion of the Vedas. In the Smriti portion, Vyasa took the same verses that were before they were divided into four. There was some balance. You good at math? You're bad at math? You're okay at math. Okay. What's 4 divided into 30? Don't count on your fingers. What's 4 divided into 30? How many times does 4 go into 30? 7, but there's a balance, right? There's a remainder. There's a remainder 2, because 4 times 7 is 28, right? And then 28 from 30 is... Sorry to put you on the spot. But. So when Vyasa divided the Vedas into 4, there were some verses remaining. And with those verses, this is what these Shrutis say. With those verses remaining, same Vedas, he then compiled the Smritis. Their point is, the Smritis are as Vedic as the four Vedas. Very important. We'll come back to that point some other time. I'll say it again though. The Smritis, that's like the Mahabharata, Ramayana, and all the Puranas. All the Puranas, the Bhagavad Purana, Vishnu Purana, Kurma Purana, Matsya Purana, Padma Purana, this Purana, that Purana, all those Smritis, they're as Vedic as the four Vedas because they came from the same body of verses that Vyasa, from which Vyasa compiled the four Vedas, and then there was a balance, a remainder. Right? After compiling all the Shrutis and all the Smritis, he then compiled... then he entrusted, chapter 5 describes, he had disciples. So he gave to different disciples, you be in charge of this Veda, you be in charge of that Veda, you be in charge of the other Veda, you be in charge of the fourth Veda, you be in charge of all the Smritis, all the Puranas. Roma Harshan, the father of Suta Goswami, was put in charge of all the Smritis, all the Puranas. And he was given his name, Roma. Roma means hair. And Harsha means that as he would narrate, his hairs would stand on end. He was an ecstatic devotee, just reciting the descriptions found in the Puranas. So his name was Romaharshan, Romaharshan Sutta. So in this way, Vyasa compiled the Vedas, entrusted them to all of his disciples, who then had others that were assisting him, to like make sure that they stayed intact. Because this is Kali Yuga, and things have a way of deteriorating. Have you noticed? Things have a way of deteriorating. So he wanted to ensure that they would stay wholesome and intact. So then he stepped back and considered, how did it come out? Just like if you have some project you're working on, maybe some of you are at the university and you're doing a paper, you spend a lot of time preparing and preparing and preparing, and then you write your paper and you review it and do some editing, and then you step back and think, okay, how did it come out? You know it's going to go to the teacher, professor, but you want to just evaluate. So Vyasa was a literary person. That's what he did. He stepped back from the whole effort and he reflected on what he had just done. And what did he find? He was feeling this pinch in the heart that we all know very well. That pinch that says, there's something missing. Yes? We all know what that is. Something's not right. Many times we're so literally, passionately involved in doing something, we're not even tuned in to what our heart says. But we slow down, just press the pause button a little bit and look inside the heart. We'll find that little feeling. It's like sand. Prabhupada's example, sand and sweet rice. Or there's a ball bearing and it's got lubricant, but it's got sand inside. You can hear it grating. Not right. So our heart is like that with sand that's abrasive. It's uncomfortable. And if we're a little thoughtful, it hurts. Here it hurts. Something's wrong. And Vyasa was pondering, why? I just completed all the Vedas. And I'm feeling this insufficiency. What is that? And just as he was feeling like that, Narada came. Narada's uncanny ability, he knows just when to come at the right time, at the right moment, and say the right things. That's why he's Narada. And he saw Vyasa and said, Vyasa, basically, because of time I'll keep it short, you don't look so good. What's wrong? Hey, Paso, what's happening here? You just described, you've done this and you've done this and you've done such wonderful things, but you look unhappy. How is that possible? And Vyasa said, I was going to ask you, because you're just like because you're in touch with Super Soul, you're just like the Super Soul. You know everything Super Soul knows, who's within the heart, and he knows all. So you already know, and you're asking me. But surely you know, so can you tell me, why is this feeling there? And Narada said, the reason is that you, although you've completed this wonderful work of compiling the Vedas, and as your professor, I give you an A+. You did. You're on the dean's list. You did great. Great job. But you haven't sufficiently glorified the personality of Godhead. You've indicated, but you haven't sufficiently focused, because, listen carefully, people in general, they want to enjoy material facilities. And you've given them within the Vedas the means of enjoying material facilities in a religious way. In a religious way. But the goal of the Vedas is not to enjoy material facilities in a religious way. And so you've cheated the people in general. You got an A+. You didn't say something wrong, because it's true. One can enjoy material facilities in a religious way by following the Vedas. But the real mission of human life is to know the personality of Godhead. And that's the real purpose of the Vedas. And you've not sufficiently, you've mentioned it, but not sufficiently dedicate one literature to that purpose. That's outstanding, above, and actually the essence of the message of the whole Vedas. So my instruction to you is compile such a literature. He'd already completed everything, including Vedanta Sutra. Then he said, so this literature should be the commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Explain. For people who don't know the personality of Godhead is the goal, explain it clearly. He's the goal. That's the meaning of Vedanta Sutra, which is the essence of all the Vedas. And all the Vedas are leading to the same message. And to prepare yourself to achieve that, he gave him a second instruction. He said, sit down in meditation, just as I have done. This is a nice lesson. A spiritual master will never ask their disciple to do something they're not prepared to do. He was not only prepared to do, he did. They described in the whole next chapter, 6, how he did. How he became Narada. How he was an obscure little boy in a remote place without even a father. And at least not knowing who his father was. And his mother, her service was, she was in charge of a dharmshala, an inn, a place where persons would stay for a night or for some duration of time in the case of the great Bhaktivedantas, the great sages who stayed there for the whole 4 months of the rainy season. And Narada got their association. And through their association, he became uplifted. And uplifted. And perfected. They gave him a means to achieve spiritual perfection. And through that means, he achieved spiritual perfection. He saw the personality of Godhead face to face. First, he saw him within. And when he was in this trance of meditation, he saw the form of the Lord, and he was in ecstasy. Tears were streaming from his eyes. His whole body was trembling, seeing my Lord standing within my heart. And then suddenly he disappeared. And Narada was startled, and he opened his eyes and looked in all directions, and he wasn't to be seen anywhere. Then he heard a voice from the sky, where the Lord, in a deep rumbling sound, like the sound of thunder, spoke and said, I have shown you my special mercy, because normally I am not to be seen unless one is perfected in their spiritual life. But because of your great sincerity, I have given you some special mercy. Now live your life this way, just as you have been doing for the rest of your life, and surely you will see the fullness of my mercy. And that was it, a little boy, maybe your age, with no mother, no father, no place to stay, just this instruction from the Lord to live his life in that way. So in his, at the end of the day of Brahma, he entered into the body of Mahavishnu along with all the other living entities and was then born as this direct son of Brahma, and now he's Narada Muni. So he said, just as I did, you do. Do this meditation. Fix your mind completely upon the personality of Godhead. And what you realize, that should be the basis of this very exceptional literature just describing the personality of Godhead. So all of that was just background to cover these three verses, which are, you can look them up later if you have Srimad Bhagavatam in your home. 1-7, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Texts 4, 5, and 6. These three verses plus number 7 are commented upon by Jiva Goswami several times in his Sandarbhas, because they're so important. They're so important because it's the essence of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the basis of what Vyasadeva realized to compile Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, the Srimad Bhagavatam flows from these few verses. And so I have 20 minutes left. The clock is ticking. So listen carefully. The first part, Bhakti Yogena Manasi Samyak Praniyate Male. That's how it begins. Vyas, it says, Bhakti Yogena Manasi Samyak Praniyate Male. Praniyate Male. He fixed his mind absolutely. Like, absolutely. Nothing else was in his mind but fixed in devotion to the personality of Godhead. And then what happened? Apashyat Purusham Purnam. He saw the personality of Godhead, Purusham Purnam, in his fullness. What our commentators say, that means he saw the whole spiritual world. It's like Brahma in his meditation. As Brahma did, Nara did, Vyas did. He saw the personality of Godhead. Because what was the circumstance for Brahma? He was seated on a lotus flower that grew from a stem, but there wasn't anything else. In all directions, it was darkness. There was no light. There was no sun. There's no Zippo lighter and, you know, a little candle. Darkness in all directions. And after his meditation upon his mantra, he saw the personality of Godhead in his fullness. Same thing. It's described in the second canto, chapter 9. This is Vyas. Sakshat Purusham Purnam. He saw the personality of Godhead in his fullness, the whole spiritual world. Mayam cha, he saw also his maya, his illusory energy. Mayam cha, tat apashrayam. Apashrayam means two things, under his control and behind him. We normally don't see the Supreme Lord because, like a cloud covers the sun, we can't see the sun. But if the cloud moves, then we can see the sun. So we can't see Krishna because of Maya, the deluding potency of the Lord, puts a whammy on the living entity and we're bewildered. We can't see. We can't see reality. We can see Maya. We can see the illusion. We can't see the Lord. So under the Lord's order, the commentators explain, He ordered His Maya, His illusory energy, under His control, you stand behind, so that my devotee can see. Just like in Ishopanishad, Hiran Mayena Padmena Satyasya Pihitam Mukham. The prayer says, Oh my dear Lord, this dazzling effulgence, please remove it, so I can see your form of bliss. Mukham means face. So Vyas saw the personality of Godhead. He saw the whole of the spiritual world with all of its varying deepness. And he saw behind the Lord his illusory potency. It gets really exciting. Next verse. Here's what Sutta Goswami is saying happened next. Yaya sammohito jiva. Moha means bewildered. Sammoha means very bewildered. Yaya sammohito jiva. The living entity becomes very bewildered by this deluding potency. Yaya samohito jiva. Atmanam trigunatmakam. Triguna, the three modes of material nature. The soul, atma, becomes so bewildered that he thinks he's not who he is. And he thinks he's what he isn't. In clinical terms, this is called crazy. If somebody goes around with their hand in their shirt saying, I am Napoleon, I'm going off to the French Revolution, come and join my army. Have you seen a doctor lately? We had this episode in our 55th Street Temple in Manhattan, right in the middle of Mangalarti, one woman had this seizure, this episode, and she started speaking French, and she was in Joan of Arc's army, and she had the power of 10 men. It took 20 men to hold her in a room until an ambulance could come and take her away. She just something might glitch. And she had this episode where she was in Joan of Arc's army yelling in French with an invisible sword raised in her hand that she was going to chop everybody up with. And the soldier in Joan of Arc's army. So when somebody thinks that they're who they're not, Atmanam Trigunatmakam Yaya samohito jiva. Vyasa. This is the state of living entities where they're forgetting who they really are, deluded by this Maya potency that's now behind the Lord, but when not behind the Lord, it's totally bewildering the living entity. He saw the condition of illusion of living entities very clearly, and he saw the liberation or the means of deliverance from that deluding condition. Paropi manyate anartam taptitam chabipadyate. That is anartha. Those of you that have been practicing Krishna consciousness for a while, you know all about anarthas. They're the unwanted things in the heart that are like weeds in your garden that are choking the plants that you want to grow. So the plant that in the heart, the plant that you want to grow is the creeper of devotion, bhakti lata bija. We want that one to grow. But there's so many other things, too abundant other things, also growing and taking all the nourishment, all the water and all the everything, the good ingredients in the soil, and growing very strong, too strong. So it's one thing leads to the next thing, is the message. This sammovikaha, and thinking, I'm this material energy according to the three modes, and then just becoming implicated in all kinds of illusory activities and suffering terribly. One thinks oneself to be a product of this material energy and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. So Vyasa realized that. But he also saw the solution. Anarto Pashamam Sakshad Bhakti Yogam Adhok Sajay. So there's a way of relieving all those weed-like conditions of your garden by the linking process of devotion unto Adhok Sajay. Now what is... Here's our scholars in the front row here. What does Adhoksaja mean? Adhoksaja is the name of Krishna. What does Adhoksaja mean? No idea. Adhoksaja? Adhoksaja means he who is beyond the senses. Akshaja. Aksha. Aksha is eyes. Like Aravindaksha. The Lord is lotus eyed. Right? Aksha means eyes. So, Adhoksaja is he who is beyond your senses. Now, this is very interesting. The same Adhoksaja term is used in this earlier in the second chapter. To describe the linking process of devotional service unto Adhoksaja. Because when we engage in devotional service, we're not just like feeling something. We're feeling something and we're doing something. Because what the mind does and what your active senses do, the active senses are to be engaged in service of the master of the senses. That's bhakti. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam. Bhakti Uchate. What is devotional service? Narada, in the Narada Pancharatna says. Rishikesha, Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam. With our senses, we engage in service for the master of the senses. That's bhakti. With your mind fixed on him, engaging the senses, practical activity. The impersonalist says, like the tortoise, withdraw the senses, control those senses. But control of the senses also means when their service for Krishna, they are engaged. And when that service for Krishna is completed, they're withdrawn. Here's some service for Krishna. Here's Maya. Here's some service for Krishna. So at will, one can extend the senses or withdraw the senses when service for Krishna is to be done. We use our senses in service to Krishna and thus purify ourselves. So bhakti yogena bhakti yogam adhoksajay. Engaging in devotional service to he who is beyond, with the senses, to he who is beyond the senses. The implication is there must be faith. Now when we're walking from where we are to where the street is, there's a little bridge. Supposing there wasn't a bridge and somebody said, okay, walk across the bridge. No way. There's no bridge. Well, there is a bridge. You just can't see it. Go ahead. well, if I can't see the bridge, I'll jump over, but I'm not going to walk over a bridge that doesn't exist. Something like that, this process of devotional service requires that we accept with faith that he who is beyond the senses to perceive is receiving our service. When we're serving the master of the senses with our senses, he's receiving our service and is extending his helping hand and helping us to cross over to the other side of material existence through that service. That requires some faith. But one who exhibits some faith or asserts a little faith, you feel the helping hand of Krishna helping you cross over the ocean of material existence. You feel the spiritual energy through the medium of devotional service. You can, in fact, perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although he's beyond the senses. Like Vyas, he saw the Personality of Godhead, but not with material senses, with spiritual senses. Supposing, like most of us, we don't have spiritualized senses. So we're in this practice stage. We're going very gingerly, very gently, very cautiously on this invisible bridge. But the Bhagavatam says this path to reach Krishna is so nice. It's like stepping in a boat on this side of the ocean. And as soon as you step in the boat that's on this side of the ocean, that ocean shrinks to the size of the water in the footprint of a calf, and you're immediately on the other side. Wow! It's mystical. But one can experience it. Like the question that came up the other day, how is this a science? And part of the answer I gave was, there's hypothesis, there's experimentation, there's observation, and there's conclusions. So here's our hypothesis. This ocean of material existence can be crossed over at once. Krishna says it in Bhagavad Gita. This is my hypothesis. You can cross over the ocean of material existence at once by stepping in this boat of transcendental knowledge and devotional service, and you're immediately on the other shore. Cross the whole ocean, just like, because the ocean of Maya shrinks, because it's just Maya. It's not even real. It appears to be. But Krishna removes that deluding potency, and you're on the other side. That's the observation. And the conclusion is, I accept Krishna as the Personality of Godhead. Even his advokta is beyond the material senses to perceive. So there's only one mind that's left. Lokasya janatad vigvang vidvangs chakra satvata samhitam. And that says that having had this realization, Vyas compiled this Satvata Samhita. You know what Samhita is, like Brahma Samhita, set of prayers and scriptural teachings. Satvata Samhita, in the quality of pure goodness. That's what this Srimad Bhagavatam is. It's the expression of Vyasa's realization. What is God? What is the deluding potency that keeps us from experiencing him? How that deluding potency is acting on the living entity? And what's the mitigation process? The mitigation process is, however influenced by the modes of nature or bewildered by misconceptions of life, if one is very fortunate to come in contact with devotional service, just by stepping in that boat of devotional service with the assistance of some guidance from those who are helping one in this process of devotional service, one can experience pratyakshavamam dharmyam susukam kartam avyayam, Krishna says. One can directly experience the spiritual world at once. Or very swiftly. It's possible at once, except we're a little attached. Prabhupada described, once he was asked by a reporter, "Swamiji, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious?" Prabhupada's answer, "Less than a moment." And in that less than a moment, two things must happen. Those two things are, one needs to give up sense gratification and give up mental speculation. Generally, people are very attached to these things, and therefore the process generally is gradual. But it's gradual only because we're attached to sense gratification and mental speculation. We're attached to Maya. We're attached to this deluding potency that's preventing us from experiencing directly Krishna. But there's a mitigating, the good news is, there's some mitigating method, devotional service. And the process of devotional service is very easy and joyfully performed. And how do we begin the process of devotional service? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just chanting the holy names of the Lord, even if people don't know what the meaning is, even if they laugh. Ha ha ha. Hare Krishna. Only here in Guyana it's Hare Bols. Not Hare Krishna. We should train people up to say Hare Krishna instead of Hare Bols. But chanting of the holy names of the Lord, it begins to awaken the dormant consciousness of the soul, and continuing with that process of hearing and chanting to go to the full mature stage of love of God. And that's what the Srimad Bhagavatam is providing us, that very gentle and very beautiful. That's what Srimad means. Beautiful Bhagavatam. Beautifully composed literature that takes us to the lotus feet of Krishna in the spiritual world. So combine the chanting of the holy name with hearing of the transcendental glorifications of Krishna, Krishna Katha, meaning words spoken by Krishna, words spoken about Krishna. And the spiritual world is accessible very quickly. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada. The best part is questions and answers, but I have to go, so.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. His Holiness Prabhupada Maharaj ki jai. Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.